Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday, June the 9th, 2023, 15 minutes past the hour, and we are having a great time celebrating our 9th anniversary on the air with this 9th anniversary celebration. And again, I want to thank Colleen Marshall, who was on last hour from WCMH, and of course, David Newell, Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, who spent so much time with us over the years doing nice things. The sweater drive back in 2015, being in the popcorn parade with us in 2015 and 2016, could not have been any better. And we have another guest coming up this hour momentarily. You know, it's one of those mornings on live radio where we're getting the guest lined up. All right, I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break here, get our next guest on the line, and come back with much more here on WGH Radio. Don't you dare go anywhere.
1-800-222-1222. If you think it might be poison, then the first thing you should do is call 1-800-222-1222. Poison can be anything you're not supposed to take. Antifreeze, pesticide, the wrong drug by mistake. If you breathed a nasty chemical, been bitten by a snake, call the Poison Control Center hotline. We're here for you night or day.
For a poison or drug emergency at home or at work, just call the Poison Control Center hotline. We're here 24-7 with the expert help you need. Free and confidential. Even if you think it's a false alarm, call
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222. If you think it might be poison and you don't know what to do, call 1-800-222-1222.
Did you receive a call or message that mentioned Social Security and demanded immediate action? Did the caller know your Social Security number or other personal information and tell you that your Social Security number had been used in connection with the crime? Did you feel worried that your Social Security number might be suspended, your bank account might be frozen or seized, or you could be arrested? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information or instant payment, email or text you pictures or documents, or use a real government official's name to gain your trust. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Do not be fooled. Hang up. Ignore them. Report this criminal activity to the Social Security Administration Office of the Inspector General at oig.ssa.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Hey, Scott Spears back with you here on WGH Radio, 18 minutes past the hour, and this hour we have something very special for you. And by the way, I do want to thank everybody who's been on this week, from Sam Donaldson to David Newell, who was Mr. McFeely on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Dick Cavett's been on with us, Dr. Art Euleen, and we have a special surprise that we have not let out of the bag coming up next hour, so don't miss that. But our guest this hour is really a hallmark for me, because this person has never been a guest on this program. Now, I believe she called in one time and did wish me a happy birthday years ago, but has never been a guest for the full balance of the hour. And I've always wanted to do this, so this is such a thrill for me during the 9th anniversary week of this program. She is a pioneer for women in the field of broadcasting. She was the first host of an audience participation talk show before Oprah. Phil Donahue heard her and said, "This lady needs to be on television." She has conquered both mediums in broadcasting, radio and television. She is an Emmy Award winner, and as I say, she is the guest I've always wanted to have on. What a pleasure it is to spend this hour with this person. To say this for the first time, we welcome to these microphones Sally Jesse Raphael. Sally, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm fine.
So good to talk with you. How are things your way?
Oh, everything is pretty strange here.
I know. With everything going, what do you make of everything going on in Canada?
No, it's just that it's come down to where we live. And I live about an hour and a half away from New York. But it's been bad. Today it's good. Today it's all right.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Sally, I wanted to start the interview. I wanted to go back to the very beginning because I don't think a lot of people know about your early years. What was your childhood like?
It was a very good childhood. That's maybe one of the problems that I had, a non-dysfunctional family and loving parents. A stage mother, that's a bit of a maligned thing there. If we didn't have stage mothers, you wouldn't have people who knew how to perform. So I have problems with people who don't like stage mothers. That's usually from the Broadway show Gypsy, that people get that bad impression. So I grew up, I guess, upper middle class family, quite well to do, loving parents, one brother, and my mother set me for every kind of lesson you could possibly have. Learn to tap dance, learn ballet, learn to sing, learn sword, épée, learn, you know, everything you would need in the theater.
Mm. When did broadcasting enter your life?
I went to Carnegie Mellon as a theater major, and then I decided I'd better switch to New York, so I switched to Barnard College, which I'm told is hard to get into today, but it wasn't then. I went to work as a telephone operator, much like the Lily Tomlin thing to do. And went to Barnard at night, and got married, and went to Puerto Rico. And at that time, I didn't speak Spanish. So my only choice was to go to work on an English radio station. And I did. I was the morning person on the English radio. And so I started as a broadcaster, as a radio person there. Actually, when I was 6 years old, I was on NBC as a quiz kid. So I really started being a broadcaster at six. But from then till after I got married, there was nothing happening. So I became a morning broadcaster. I then became a foreign correspondent for UPI and AP. Both. I learned Spanish, obviously, and covered Central and South America. Did a little work for the government. And then after 28 years back in Puerto Rico. I went to Miami because I could work in two languages at that time in Miami, and it would be easier to get a job. Got a job on WIOD, wonderful Isle of Dreams, and had an amazing all-night show. One of the best, most interesting shows I've ever done was the all-night show in Miami. I had Jackie Gleason as a regular listener, and Tennessee Williams would come and sit with me in the studio. And I met really fascinating people. My husband was producing the show, and he asked for a $10 raise, and Cox Broadcasting said no. So that night we said, "You've had your last show." We packed up and took the kids, and off we went to Hartford, Connecticut, where I went to a radio station with bullet holes in the glass. It was a liberal station in a conservative town, and I stayed there till they fired me. I was fired at that point about 18 times. I've been fired about, I guess, 22 or 23 at this point.
Well, what is the lesson you've learned about being fired, Sally? Because obviously you've been a success.
The lessons is the lesson you have, Scott, that persistence is probably more important than anything, probably more important than talent. The Kardashians can tell you that. I would say persistence, just like you celebrating your ninth year.
Never take no for an answer.
Never take no for an answer, exactly.
You know, Sally, radio and television are obviously both in the broadcasting field, but two very different mediums. What differences did you find to be the biggest between those two mediums?
Radio is a better medium than television because it includes the listener's imagination. Television is too out there. You see what's happening, and that's not, to my mind, as good an art form.
What makes a good radio broadcaster?
A good radio broadcaster is a storyteller. Somebody who... I remember one night, on WIOD, I was doing an all-night show. It was a call-in show. It was from, I think, about midnight to 8 a.m. That's an eight-hour show. And one night the phones went down. Now, you have only one person, you don't have a guest, and you have no phones. So the idea is, can you talk for 8 hours? And the answer, obviously, was, yeah, I can talk for 8 hours, sure. So a good radio broadcaster is a storyteller. I think Larry King was a great radio broadcaster. I didn't think much of him on television. I knew him quite well, but I think he was phenomenal on radio. Trying to think of who else. The guy with the wooden car. That won't mean anything to you. Let me think. He's the Christmas story with the kid with the BB gun, who wants the BB gun?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay, who was it written by? It was written by a radio broadcaster who's... I'm having a senior moment.
Was it Gene...
Shepherd.
Yes, Gene Shepherd.
Yeah, that was a great, great radio broadcaster.
You know, Sally, I love your story because it involves one of my favorite people, of how you went from radio to television. Tell that story.
Radio to television. Well, I was doing a radio show I did ABC and NBC, and I don't remember which one it was on. It was on 120% of the country. Now, how do you get on 120% of the country? You get on 20% of the towns on two stations at night. And Phil Donahue and Marla Thomas were riding in a car in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I believe it was Albuquerque. And he heard me, and he told the boss that lady ought to be on television. And that's how I got the television show for Multimedia, which owned a series of small stations in the Midwest out of St. Louis, Missouri.
What is Phil Donahue's place in broadcasting, and what does he mean to you in your life?
Well, you know, I've never been invited to Phil's home. I've never had dinner with Phil Donahue in a restaurant or anywhere else. So people think that we know each other, and I really don't know him. Now, what I know is that he is one of the most important broadcasters that came along in the 20th century. He took broadcasting, which was pretty well defined, and made it into audience participation. He stood there and asked people, "What do you think? What do you think?" And he was also very daring about the topics that he used. And he wasn't afraid of inviting extremely difficult and exciting people on his program. So I think I have nothing but the utmost respect and praise for Phil Donahue.
You know, Sally, I think about your talk show. When it was on television, cable had just come in. Internet was certainly not there at the time. And in the late 80s and early 90s, there was no more recognizable person in this country than Sally Jesse Raphael. I believe at that point your ratings were better than Phil Donahue's, or pretty equal to it. You wrote a book. You won an Emmy. Everybody knew who you were. What is it?
We won two Emmys.
Two Emmys. What is it like to be that recognizable? Because people aren't that recognizable in this age because we're so fragmented.
Yes. You know, it's a matter of be careful what you ask for. When there was only ABC, NBC, CBS, and one other channel, all the broadcasters would sit around and say, "Well, the executives are pretty stupid. We really wish there were tons more stations where we would have opportunities." Well, now there are tons more stations where you have opportunities, and no one can earn the kind of money that we were lucky enough to earn in those days. Nor, as you say, are you as strong in show business or is recognizable, because the pie, it was a pie, and the pie was split five ways, and now the pie is split 1,000 however many streaming devices there are.
People really felt like they knew Sally Jesse Raphael. You were like an aunt or a sister to people. What was it that you were able to jump through the screen and grab people? What were you doing that others didn't?
I talked once with Hugh Downs. Do you know who he was?
Yeah, you was on this program a lot.
Yes. Hugh Downs told me that he said once, if you remain calm and if you remain friendly and if you remain comfortable, then you will have a very long broadcasting career. If you are sharp or biting, then you have only a certain amount of time. And that proved true of Hugh Downs, proved true of Johnny Carson, proved true of a lot of people. It's the comfort level that people have with you. As you said, I was an aunt or I was a sister. I was somebody that people were comfortable with. And that pretty much explains what a long career, if you want a long career. Now, today you can make a lot of money in a short career and say goodbye. But those are not real broadcasters. Those are not people who came up through the ranks and paid their dues and, did it all. I think I was a street reporter. I was also an anchor woman on WPIX in New York. I think that paying your dues in broadcasting is pretty important in the long run. It helps.
I just want to touch on this, Sally. I know every broadcaster and every publication in the country has asked you about the red glasses, and I don't want to ask you why the red glasses, but I want to say you are a superlative broadcaster, excellent. You're a very smart woman, graduate of Barnard. What is it like to be known for red glasses? Does it bug you?
No. No, it doesn't bug me any more than a cigar might bug a famous comedian. No, if that's the way people want to think, that's all right. I'm grateful for anything that, that people think kindly of. They can't think unkindly of red glasses. They can't say anything nasty about glasses.
What do you think it was about red glasses that made them a trademark?
That nobody had red in those days. That was simple. Today, tons of broadcasters have them, even men.
Hmm. When people see you today, do you have the red glasses on, or are they upset if you're not wearing them?
No. I don't think people care one way or the other. I don't wear them when I'm not doing a show. And what I've been doing lately is acting jobs. After the television show was over, I went back to what my mother had envisioned and became an actor, and I've been acting, and I've done 53 movies, none under my name. All to fool the public. Different color hair, different makeup, different padding, different things. It's been great fun. Really teeny little parts. Whenever I meet a movie producer, I ask, can I be in their movie in a very small way? It doesn't pay a great deal. In fact, I got a check the other day that was really interesting for 1 cent. Now, think of what it cost them to send me for SAG, Screen Actors Guild, to send me a 1 cent check. How many people had to have handled that? How many accountants had to do the math? And then the stamp that was on the envelope. But it's been worth it. Do I wear the red glasses when I'm out in public? No, I mean, a pretty much a private life. I have been very careful not to want to have friends in show business. I think that when you need to have people who you think are your friends in show business so that you can say, well, I was out with blank blank, or I had dinner with blank blank. I think that's an insecurity in a person. So I think your friends ought to be who you went to school with, who you meet in your neighborhood, things like that. I think that makes you better grounded than trying to catch the Beverly Hills fly.
Is there any particular reason when you do the films that you alter your appearance and don't use your name?
Oh, yes, because that's the joke. And it's me playing a joke, of course. If I used my name and I didn't alter my appearance, then that would be Sally Jesse Raphael. But the actor isn't Sally Jesse Raphael. She's the actor. So that's the joke.
How close is the person we saw on the talk show, Sally Jesse Raphael, and the person?
How close am I to her? I think it's the same person. I do believe it's the same person. She knew that you had to do certain things to earn a living for show business, which I don't think. But I think Phil is still Phil. I think I am still me. Yes, I don't think we're different.
I want to talk about the end of the Sally Show after 20 years, because it's one of the most interesting stories, and you were so honest in the end of that show when people really weren't honest as to why their shows were being canceled. You did great shows in the 80s and early 90s, Audrey Hepburn and Jerry Lewis, and shows on AIDS and Mothers Against Drunk Driving, tremendous shows, and then the tabloid talk show came in. The Maury Povich, the Jerry Springer type of shows, and your show changed. Why did that happen?
The people who own the show, NBC Universal, who are basically bad people, they insisted that getting shows like Who Your Baby's Mama or Who Your Baby Daddy, that kind of thing, I found that very demeaning to people, and I found that the people were being used. Anyhow, that's the show they wanted. And two of my producers said, okay, we can make Sally do that show. That isn't really, I don't believe, why I was fired. I think I made a mistake. I had cancer, and I was dumb enough to tell somebody in the NBC organization that I did. And that would mean that they would have to pay a lot for the insurance that they had on me. And I believe that's why they fired me, because I had cancer. Would I go to court and prove it? No, I'm not somebody who does that. I don't sue people. Not that kind of thing. But I do believe that's why they kept Maury. They had three employees, me, Maury, and Jerry. They kept the two men and let the woman go. And I really think that's why.
Were you surprised at that time, as big as a celebrity as you were, that the cancer story did not get out?
No, I'm pretty good at things not getting out or getting out. No, I wasn't. What happened that was hard was they told me the show was being renewed. I told the 250 employees I had on the staff that it was okay, have a baby, buy a house. We're good. We've been renewed. And then 1 month later, they called me in and fired me, and the show was over. So I had to go in front of 250 people and say, I'm terribly sorry. I told you you could go have a baby, buy a house, move, do whatever you're going to do. And it hurt me a lot that I felt they would feel that I lied to them.
And obviously, you're still with us and everything turned out okay, but the cancer, that story ended okay on your behalf?
Yep, 22 years in remission, yes.
Tremendous to hear. Sally, you had cancer at the time. Your show after 20 years is canceled. You have to get up in front of your staff, who you've already told to continue to do their things and tell them not to do things. You said how hard that was. All these things going on, how'd you get through that time?
I guess because having been fired 22 or 23 times, I guess maybe it comes with the territory, you know. I hadn't been for a while, but it comes with the territory. I was also lied to by the CAA, who was my agent. They said, oh, you know, we'll get you another show. Don't worry. Well, it's 22 years, and I'm still waiting for CAA to get me another show. Not only have they got me another show, they have got me, being on anybody else's show. So, you have to be a little more careful, I guess, than I was.
You know, that is very peculiar. I've always wondered that, because people who were in daytime television, Phil Donahue ended up for a time on MSNBC. Geraldo certainly has survived in cable news. At one point, Jerry Springer was thought to be running for governor of Ohio. Why do you think you didn't end up with your own cable news show? You certainly had the credentials and the broadcasting chops.
I think I was a woman.
All about being a woman. How is it in the industry, at your level, to be a woman? What works against you?
What works against you is the things that women do best are sometimes the things that are best in business. But it's hard for the powers that be that were all men in those days. Certainly up to 22 years ago, that it was all male. They no understanding or appreciation of it. So it's always been hard. People often ask me, well, as a radio broadcaster, who did you look up to? And the answer was, there was no one. I spent many years as a disc jockey on radio, different radio stations, WNEW FM, for example, in New York, which is a top radio station, but there were no women disc jockeys in those days. They didn't exist.
To be away from the talk show format and the news business for the last 20 years and doing movies, what have you made of the news? It's certainly been interesting, the Donald Trump phenomenon becoming president. What's been your feeling on the whole Trump phenomenon in the media?
You know, we get what we deserve. One of the things that has helped me is 28 years in Puerto Rico, and I live 24 in France. Living outside the United States, you kind of get a different view of America than you do when you're inside it. I do think the country gets what the country deserves.
Where do you think we're headed at this point? It's a very interesting time, President Trump could be indicted. He's running for office. The Republican field's beefing up.
Oh, he was indicted.
Indicted, I guess, by the federal government is what I should have said. Yeah. What do you make of this time we're in? Possibly the oldest president ever elected again with Joe Biden. Where is America in 2023?
Well, I have a hard time believing that because someone is older, they're not capable. What television wants is the 18 to 35 demographic. And I think that's fine if you want to sell Pablum and diapers. however, I do think that there is a certain wisdom that comes with someone who's been around a while and learned. And I think that saying that that person is not capable because of the number, they are this number, they are this age, I find that reprehensible.
When your show ended, Sally, one thing I remember, I believe the day your show ended after 20 years, the television show, you went on The View, the talk show at that time, with Barbara Walters, and they were saying, oh, Sally, we're sad your show ended, and you were saying how happy you were that it had ended, and you'd been offered a cooking show and all things of that nature. Were you really happy that the show ended?
No, I was lying.
Did you feel you needed to do that?
Yes.
So
and
what?
They never offered me a cooking show.
Really?
I had done a cooking show. I had done one in Puerto Rico in Spanglish that was exceedingly popular. And it was popular through Central and South America with Henry Corona, who is the chef of Trujillo. Did anyone really offer me anything? No, not in the last 22 years, no one's offered me anything. Mm. A man came to the house and said, how would you like to do radio on Sirius? And I said, sure, I'd love to. And he went away. Oh, he got a call and he said, I'm sorry, I have to go. And he went away. And they never contacted me again. I tried to contact them because certainly after 30 years in radio, I should be able to do it, a serious show. But they said no, and that was the end of that.
We're chatting with Sally Jesse Raphael. We've got about 10 minutes left with her, and she has my undying gratitude for coming on. I've wanted to do this interview with Sally for so long. Sally, when we look back at that time now, knowing that that was a lie, that you were not happy that the show ended, what was the last day really like in 2002?
Oh, it was glorious. We had a great Dick Cavett who was on your show. He was there. We had wonderful people who had appeared on the show, so we had a great final show. There was really, I believe the agent, that he was just about ready to get something new and exciting. So there was no negative or sadness in me about that. It took quite a while for me to realize that they weren't real. They weren't telling me the truth.
Of course, recently we all learned of the passing of Jerry Springer, and not to speak of the man, but the show that he did, what did that do to daytime television?
Dumbed it down.
For as smart a guy as Jerry was, why do you think he went along with that?
For the money.
Could you have done that?
No. Not really. I couldn't have. But then Jerry wasn't a broadcaster. Jerry was a politician. Remember, Jerry gave a check to a prostitute. That's something only a politician would do, not a good broadcaster. Jerry laughed. I liked Jerry a lot. He was a very fun. I didn't, again, never had dinner with him, never went to his house. He never came to mine. But he was a funny guy, and he took everything with a jovial sense of humor. He was really delightful. It was like he was standing there watching himself doing the show and saying, ha ha, okay, just send the paycheck.
Mm. Were you surprised, Sally, when you started to do those shows, the boot camps and things like that, that the ratings did go sky high? Did that surprise you?
Well, the boot camps were real. That was good stuff. It helped. I always thought that the company ought to come back and find those people 20 years later, the kids I sent to boot camp, and see what happened to them. I've asked NBC to do that several times. They have no interest. And they own the shows. I don't own the shows. People keep sending me texts saying, can I get the show my grandfather or my father was on? And the answer is, I don't own them. I don't have them. I don't know how you get them. Every time we've asked for a show from NBC, they wanted an enormous amount of money for us to look at my own show. So I guess I could not have done that, no.
You know, it's very interesting, Sally. You've talked about having a great admiration for Phil Donahue, but never being friends, never going to his house, getting along with Jerry, a guy who laughed, never went to his house for dinner. You certainly were as big a name as they were in their time, in your time. Why is this? What is it about Sally that you didn't get invited over for dinner? That's strange, too, I think, for us to hear.
Not that I didn't get invited, but that I didn't want to make friends with people who were just in my business. Also, that I didn't live near any of them. You know, geography has a lot to do with it. You don't really want... I never wanted to live in L.A., and I think in order to have a lot of friends in show business, you really have to live in Los Angeles and be part of the Beverly Hills crowd. That isn't something I'm interested or was ever interested in doing.
At this age and stage in your life, Sally, is there still something you want to do that you have not gotten done?
Oh, tons. I have a bucket list like everyone should.
Is there something major on that list in the broadcasting industry that you haven't gotten done?
No, nothing in the broadcast industry.
What is your legacy in the broadcast industry? Because everybody knows you.
I don't know. I've never thought about having a legacy. I don't think I was that important, and I don't believe that I will have a legacy. It doesn't matter to me, you know. It's there are people who've done really important things in broadcasting. I'm not one of them.
Mm. Is there anything you regret in your life, just the life in general?
I should have licensed the red glasses. I've never done a commercial because I don't believe that people who like you ought to see you touting a product. Tom Brady with this doing tons of commercials. I don't understand why he needs that money. Doesn't make sense to me. I think it cheapens things. Does that answer the question?
It did, and it makes me think, you know, life in general, we all go through different things. You've had loss in your life of loved ones, certainly have faced illness, as we've talked about here. How do you get through it? So many people going through it day to day.
We all live lives of quiet desperation. I think that faith will help you through it. Not something that has helped me, but it will help many, many people. So I'm very positive about those people who are lucky enough to have faith. I think that you just really have to realize how important you are to others. You know, it's a matter of behaving correctly so that your family sees you, your grandchildren, I have two, see me behaving correctly. I wouldn't want a fan to see me not behaving correctly. There has to be some morality. And I think having taking a moral stance is a pretty important thing. Not today, not much, but to me it's important.
What you are such an honest person, Sally. I think people can tell that by your shows and certainly this interview today. Is there something you could tell us that we don't know or that has never been said about Sally Jesse Raphael?
Yes, she paints good portraits.
What is life like today for you?
What is what?
What is life like at this point?
Pretty good. I'm very lucky to have very good friends. Not a lot, but you don't need a lot. And a very loving family. I just went to my grandson's graduation at the University of Washington in Seattle and had a terrific weekend with people far younger than me. I live on a farm with a lot of land and flowers and things around me. I have a good boyfriend. Things are pretty good.
In our last couple minutes, do you have a philosophy by which you've lived by?
Oh, my grandmother would say, laugh and the world laughs with you, cry and you cry alone. For this tired old earth must borrow its mirth. It has troubles enough of its own.
I like that. Sally, I want you to do one thing for me. We talked about the red glasses. Can you give me the funny story about the red glasses when you tell people how you got the red glasses?
God, I hate doing that story.
We don't have to do it if you don't want to.
I don't want to, Scott.
Well, we'll skip it. They can see it on YouTube somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah. Sally, you're going to be remembered. How would you like to be remembered?
Communicator.
Good communicator.
Just a communicator.
Sally,
that would be enough.
Sally, I've got to tell you this. To have you on after all this time, we've spoken before, but to have you on this program for the 9th anniversary means the world to me. I have been a huge fan of yours, and I know when I put this interview up for people who are not listening live right now, they are going to enjoy it so much because we haven't heard from you in the last few years so often. And you are just a superlative broadcaster. There's no doubt about it. Some people are fun to watch on television, no matter what they're doing, a serious or a fun topic. You were always fun to watch 5 days a week for 20 years, and that's a trick.
23 years.
23. So, Sally, that's right. Never shave any time off. Never shave any time off. Count every little bit of it.
I had to get up.
You had to get up in the morning. What was it like to win an Emmy, Sally? You won two. What was it like?
Couldn't care less. I think the whole thing about giving awards like that is really ridiculous.
Sally, this means the world to me that you've come on, and I hope you come back periodically. I really do. I love you.
You are the most persistent human being I have ever met. Now, if anybody ought to be on Sirius, it ought to be you.
Sally, that means the world. I hope you mean that in a good way. Persistent.
I do.
Sally, you're the best, and I hope we do speak again. Thank you for everything.
You're welcome, and congratulations.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sally Jesse Raphael. Hey, the one and only. We've got more fun coming up. Don't you dare go anywhere.
50.
Are you tired of the normal zoo experience?